Well, ever since man first walked on the moon, the idea of colonizing it has always been a futuristic scientific possibility. Well, now that possibility may actually become a reality in this century. As the International Space Station has been continually occupied for the last 17 years, the next step could well be a permanent outpost on the moon. Now, this would allow for a new era of space exploration and other off-Earth industries, like mining, for example. Well, Professor Andrew Dempster is the director of the Australian Centre for Space Engineering Research at the University of New South Wales. In the last week, he's been playing host to a gathering of international experts on off-Earth mining. Next week, he'll be involved in the world's biggest space forum when the International Astronomical Congress meets in Adelaide. He's managed to squeeze us into his really busy schedule. Professor Dempster joins me in the studio now. Thank you for coming in, Andrew.
Thank you. Good morning.
Let's start with colonizing the moon. I love this idea of a colony on the moon. Now, the European Space Agency is talking up a moon village concept. What would that actually entail, and why would we want to put a community on the moon?
Yes, the Europeans are talking about going to the moon. NASA, the US, is talking more about going to Mars. And part of that scheme of going to Mars could involve a step where they go to the moon first. So the moon is, or settlement of the moon is on the radar of a number of the big agencies. They're talking about building settlements there, but probably what would happen first, there'd need to be robots would go out and prepare the ground for humans as they were to arrive sometime in the future beyond that point.
I'm interested in this idea of building settlements on the moon. So we're talking about colonizing the moon here, settling in there, putting humans in there. I'm thinking of shopping centers, supermarkets. We're probably not.
Well, shopping centres may not be the right thing to be thinking of now, but certainly trade in space and making transactions that are not within the boundaries of nation states on the surface of the Earth is something which is exercising the minds of a lot of people. The legal implications of doing commerce in space, obviously you mentioned the mining forum that we held last week at UNSW, the idea of being able to make a profit in space. Now, that may seem a bit far-fetched to people, but if you are paying $10,000 a kilogram to launch something into space, then if you can produce it in space and use it in space for less than $10,000 a kilogram, you're ahead. And that's where
it'd be a lot more economical, though.
And in fact, this is the third forum that we've run. Mm. And in the previous ones, that market did not exist. But there is now a company that's prepared to pay for water in space. Specifically, what they're looking for is water broken down into hydrogen and oxygen for rocket fuel.
Right. Now, before we get ahead of ourselves, the topic of colonizing other planets has always been a very popular one, particularly as this planet starts to become overcrowded, its resources start to diminish. Do we have a right to colonize other planets, the moon, Mars, if we can't even look after our own?
There are a lot of ethical questions buried in that question you just asked. The first, if you think about environmental damage, if we're moving into space, the assumption mostly is that we will not find life there, and so we won't be affecting ecosystems. And so in a way, that's a good thing. Another approach is that on Earth, we have a finite set of resources, and we have a growing population which is using the finite resources, and that presents us with a lot of problems, and the way that we should think about those problems changes if you don't think of resources being finite. And it may change in a bad way. If we have this idea that we have infinite resources available to us in space, we may behave even more badly with our own resources on the surface of the Earth. So that's a couple of issues. Yeah. Another one specifically to do with the moon. One of the stories that people say is that every culture in the world has some relationship with the moon. A particular culture may never have seen snow, another one may never have seen a tree or something or other, or the sea, but they've all seen the moon. So everyone has a connection with the moon. So messing with the moon is something that has much more sensitivity than, for instance, mining an asteroid, where people do not have any specific romantic relationship with an asteroid. And Mars, which is further away, it's a dot, whereas the moon is a big circle in the sky.
Just going back to colonizing the moon and putting humans on the moon, who would be able to do this? As in, who would be up there and living on the moon? I'm presuming it wouldn't be the lower income
who has the right stuff.
Who has the right stuff to be able to go there.
Well, actually, for the moon settlement, that has not been discussed as much as, for instance, the Mars One project of putting people on Mars.
But this is all in the name of exploration. So we're not actually just settling there. We're actually going there to build a base to explore further.
It's a classic colonization story. So initially what will happen, missions would need to be sponsored. And again, even if you think about the way that, say, America was colonized by Europe, they were sponsored by nation states, sponsored expeditions. And then when those expeditions went out there, they found ways of making money, came back, and then the commercial side of it followed. And that's exactly what we will see in space. And what we are seeing, I mean, most of the development or space exploration has been done by nation states. And the sort of nation states that are interested, so Europe and China are interested in the moon, and the Americans are interested in Mars. Mm. And that's where people are thinking about colonizing at the moment. But it is done very much at the nation state level. There are companies like SpaceX and other companies like Google with their Lunar XPRIZE for the moon. They are looking at doing things with colonization in space.
It does sound like it's going to get quite crowded out there if you've got nations and you've got commercial organizations out there as well. Now, there is a global outer space treaty that forms the basis of international space law. At this stage, 107 countries are parties to the treaty. Another 23 have signed the treaty but have not completed ratification. Explain to us what this treaty actually regulates.
Well, I think the main lesson that you can draw from that treaty is that bodies in space or beyond the surface of the Earth are the property of all mankind. And it's not for a nation state to claim land, or even a company to claim land, if you think of it in that way, on the moon or on Mars or wherever. One of the other interesting things about some of these big international treaties is that they've never been tested. So there has never been a precedent set in this area. So
right,
and that's a strength and weakness. Everyone's sort of behaving themselves.
For now.
It hasn't needed to be
but
tested.
But then what would be the punitive measures if somebody breaks a rule?
This is one of the areas which is unclear. And it's the fact that it hasn't been tested, you worry about a number of things, like who has jurisdiction, who enforces the law. And even if you were, for instance, to say that the United Nations should be enforcing those laws, how do they do it? And would people respect that body to enforce the law? It's a very interesting. In fact, the last time I was in this studio, I did use the term. It's the Wild West out there.
I think
that's what will happen for the immediate future.
It's beyond this earth. Now, next week, Adelaide will be hosting the world's biggest space industry gathering. Apart from hosting it, though, does Australia actually have a seat at this table?
There are weaknesses in Australia's position when it comes to the international space environment, primarily because we don't have a space agency. Of all of the OECD countries, there's us and Iceland left, so I'm just hoping that we're not going to be the last of the OECD countries to get a space agency. There's talk about it at the moment, and we're quietly confident that the government will do the right thing in the near future. But, yes, in the way that countries interact with each other, when they talk about space, they talk to each other through their space agencies.
Right.
If they have a mission that they wish to do in space and they want to collaborate, they will come talk to your space agency. So we can't answer those questions, but we can't even ask those questions because we haven't got people here who are thinking about those ideas for Australia.
On that point, we're just coming up to news time now. Very quickly, if you could explain to us, Australia is very big on mining. Where do we sit in terms of mining on the moon then?
Well, in fact, the discipline of space mining is something which We've sort of adopted it in UNSW probably about 5 years ago, my colleague Serkan Saydam there. And these ideas are really coming to fruition now with some very strong research coming out of his group. I think because Australia has the biggest mining companies, the best mine automation, robotics, and the best mining research, we're in a very good position to lead in mining in space.
Well, we hope Australia does get there. Thank you very much for coming in, Professor. Professor Andrew Dempster there, the Director of the Australian Centre for Space Engineering Research at the University of New South Wales.